Welcome to a new episode of Beyond Business, the podcast to inspire the next generation of entrepreneurs. I'm Alex, and this is the first episode of a new series on education, where we try to get a sense of how the education industry is changing in a post-COVID world. Let's start the show. Today, we have our first English-speaking guest, Lewis Dinnis, GMP Partner Manager at Google. Hello, Lewis, and thank you for coming on the podcast.
Thanks for having me, Alex. My pleasure.
So, Lewis, could you give us a brief introduction on your background and what your role is at Google?
Sure. So, I studied business and administration back in Portugal where I was born. Then I did some years of consulting, but I really, it wasn't actually what I was expecting because I was working more into like the financial side of taxation. Okay, so I was advising mostly big companies in how to restructure their financial structures to optimize the tax flows, inflows and outflows they would have. But for me, I was looking more for more entrepreneurial experiences, more digital areas. And this actually was a good way to start my career. But then I jumped into a more international and entrepreneurial part of my career. So I went to Paris to study, to do my master's degree there. And I studied at the SCP Europe for 2 years. And during these 2 years, I started to understand my passion about entrepreneurship and into the digital world. So I did some internships in different cities, first in London, then in Paris, then in Madrid. And all of them had one thing in common, that was the digital area of these startups that were growing a lot or raising money, and they were looking for more people to help in this digital transformation. So after these experiences, I was at Rocket Internet, Home2Go, which is a sort of a Trivago for rural houses. I came to Google, where I joined the marketing team in the beginning. I joined the marketing team for 1 year as a product marketing manager. And after being in the marketing team, in Madrid, in Spain, I jumped into a different role, a more technical role inside the sales organization, but with a technical role of a mobile specialist. So for 3 years, I was working with the biggest companies in Spain, mostly like Zara, like the Inditex Group, Iberia, Vueling, eDreams, El Corte Inglés, this kind of Oysho, this kind of Spanish brands, to help them improving their mobile experiences. You know, Spain has a mobile penetration of around 85% of the people have a mobile phone, a mobile device. And back in the days when I started, the average of these mobile websites in Spain would need around 15 seconds to load the first page, you know? So they had horrible experiences. And my job was to help these big companies in transforming their business in this wave that was already huge and growing a lot, which was the mobile trend. So after being in the mobile world, I changed into a more commercial role inside Google, where I was working with the education industry in working with some of the biggest education players in Spain, both biggest and most promising companies of education in Spain, and was helping them in their digital transformation as well. through Google tools or through Google technology mostly, but also business insights and trying to understand where they could grow. And yeah, since then I have been also working with some media agencies, both in the media side of their business to in the ads side of their business, and also in the technological side of their business, because media agencies now increasingly more try to engage in technological projects, not only be the partner that does the media campaigns or produces the videos or produces the creativities, right? Mm-hmm. But they try also to be a technological partner. They try to be the owners of the media strategy, of the data strategy, and how to use it the best way possible. So it's an interesting area as well that I'm working now.
Okay. Okay. Wow. And so I just wanted to ask you more about education at Google. So, I mean, we all know Google makes I think 90%+ of its revenue and profits from advertising. And we also associate Google with all these products, like, of course, a search engine, but also YouTube, Google Maps, and also more sort of B2B products like Google Cloud. But education isn't always the first thing that comes to mind. And can you give us a sense of sort of how big education is at Google and sort of what are the main activities Google has in education?
Yeah, definitely. Google has a big focus in, or the mission of Google as a whole is to make the information, the global information, easily accessible to everyone. Okay, easy and accessible to everyone. And if you think about this mission, is a very ambitious mission, right? And a very long-term vision that was defined long time ago. This vision englobes the access to good information, to good education, to good classes for everyone in the world. And Google is not been entering as an official education company yet, right? So does not have any campus, does not have any proper like official courses for years, right? But there are some certifications of Google that are increasingly growing more. Okay, so in one side, Google works a lot in these certifications. There are three ways that Google is working in this area. First is these certifications that you can find many in Google Skillshop and other platforms online. You find a lot of potential trainings that you can do with Google and that you can actually get a certification from the platform where you'll be certified in YouTube Ads, for example, or in Google Cloud. Okay, you can actually get a proper certification that is increasingly more valuable in the market. Okay, and is constantly updated. So it's an area that Google is entering that field, although it's completely free, doesn't make any money out of it for now. In a second way that Google works with education is with a division in Google that is called Google for Education. And Google for Education tries to increase the penetration of Google products inside education institutions, such as colleges, such as young schools or universities, with tools that Google has that can facilitate how you do classes online. Okay, so Google Meet is one product. Google Classroom is another one where you simulate a classroom online. Jamboard is another one where you can have like a board and you can draw in the board directly online. There are many different tools that Google for Education tries to push into institutions. Always, of course, together with our hardware suite, such as Chromebooks, such as phones such as Chromecasts when needed, so together with the suite of Google. And third, I was working more into the third area, although I also worked a bit in the second one. Google tries to be a business partner of many companies. Okay, many companies, as I was working and I said before. And some of those companies can be education companies. How do we try to engage in a business partnership with these companies? We try to help these businesses growing their presence and growing their success online, basically. And how do we do that? So as you can imagine, Google understands quite a lot of digital or online experiences, has a lot of historical on how the user behaves, what is the user experience that the user likes, how it changes, how can you make your website fast, how can you do your first party data or data in general strategy and use it well. We also have a lot of searches every day, billions of searches that are done in our platform. So there is a lot of information that we can, if we work on it well, and of course complying with all the legal requirements, like privacy is priority number one in Google, you can take some pretty interesting conclusions. So part of my job was, for example, helping my clients, my universities, understand where could be the biggest market for them. If they offer courses of an MBA, where are people around the world looking more for MBA? Okay. Or as simple as, where are people looking more for the keyword MBA online instead of MBA, which means that they are more probable to be willing to study online. Okay, so if you want to launch a new MBA in some market, you can have this kind of analysis, okay? Or then you do the skill gap analysis, where you are offering the programs and where is the market demanding, right? And you'll understand where it can be your opportunity. You can also do
analysis. Would you build the strategy would you just be sort of the knowledge partner to the institutions, or would you actually help them to build a strategy to launch, for example, a new course or something like that?
Yeah, that's a very good question. It depends a lot on the institution, and they are the owners of the decision, right? They are the ones that take the decisions. If they accept us as, give me just a second, sorry.
Yeah, no problem.
If they give us, if they trust us and they want our help to do that, we are more than happy to help them in growing more their business. Okay. If they want to do it themselves and just want us to advise them on growth areas, we are also happy to do that. So it really depends on the willingness of the company.
Okay. And so you don't operate with a Spanish education institutions, right? Or would it be more, would you also help sort of more globally?
Mostly Spanish, yes. Although they could operate worldwide. They could operate in many countries or worldwide, and would be helping them in their international expansion. Okay, but mostly if the headquarters would be based in Spain, we'll try to work with them.
Okay, and so you mentioned certifications or certificates earlier, and that's okay. No, so basically, in August, Google announced that they were going to be adding this certification program for which, like, after 6 months of an online course, such as product management or data science, for only about $50 a month, you could then apply to Google. And the senior VP of Global Affairs, Kent Walker, said that these certificates would be treated as the equivalent of a four-year degree for related roles. That's quoted. So, like, this is really, really interesting because I think it shows there's a lot of movement going on or that's about to happen in the education space, in particular ways that the education system, especially in the US, has become too expensive, a caste system where only the top 1% of people can actually really afford going to university and getting and prepping for all the university. And I think, like, these micro certifications that already exist, for example, EDX or Coursera, do some things that are similar. But I was curious to hear your opinion on this. Like, why is Google doing it? What are the advantages for Google? Like, why should a company consider perhaps doing a course like that? And what do you think in general the sort of more medium to long term changes in the education system might occur?
So in terms of Google decision, I mean, these are typically very global and centralized decisions that are not shared with a company worldwide normally, because they can be. There can be many reasons, right? And I can have my more or less personal opinion, but why the decision was taken and why Kyle just said that we actually don't have, like, private information in these kind of topics, more internal information on these topics. My view, completely personal view, is that Google sees that the company has a lot of knowledge that does not exist out there in the market. And we actually do a lot of trainings with our agencies and our advertisers in the local markets, where we do these kind of trainings. And we see that the companies do not have these kind of skills, and we just do them for free. You know, this all over the world, not like in Spain, like in all over the world, Google is doing trainings to companies for free on digital skills. Can be data science, can be measurement and attribution online of their advertisements, can be about digital technology to improve the ad success, and it's completely for free. So my personal view on this is that Google realized that, why do we do it so much for free worldwide, and why can't we understand or test if this can be monetized somehow, you know? So there is a lot of good talent internal. The cost downside isn't so big. I think the potential upside can be big. So I've never done the numbers on this, but can be an interesting new area of business. But I mean, I don't have, like, a more professional or internal view on that. Actually, it's mostly personal one. In terms of how I see education changing, you mentioned a couple of players that are super interesting, right? EDX or Coursera, or to you, they are looking, in my perspective, they are approaching this world in the right way. There is so much, as I said before, so much online information, so much good content online, so much information on what the students are looking for, what are the skill gap that exists out there in the market. And this, I mean, if you think about it 5 minutes, you'll understand clearly that there is way more demand of data scientists or developers or SQL developers than supply of these kind of skills, right? So traditional universities are typically solid and big structures that do not adapt so easily to this kind of fast-moving world, right? And digital companies have this possibility to do it quite fast. If the content is online, you don't need a physical professor, you don't need a physical place with chairs, with tables, right? Everything turns way more agile to create some content, get your word known, work on your SEO, on your online marketing to get your message to whoever you want to take it, and develop a new potential course. Okay. I also think that the offline education is not going to disappear. I think it's very important, the physical presence of people. I personally have been taking online courses a lot. There are many advantages, but I would prefer, if I'll have to choose, I'll prefer a mix of online and offline. The online days, the ones that could suit me better, that would be more, give me more flexibility to study from home or from the park or wherever. But then I would also like to meet the professors in person. In my personal view, you get more out of it. So I think it's not going to disappear. It's also the networking part, in my opinion, it has nothing to do online and offline. I met some people online, in online trainings. They try to create some communities to develop the networking. But everything is still, this year looks to me a bit forced. And you are forced to book half an hour to talk with someone that you don't know, and then you don't have time. When it is in a physical way, you go for a beer, no? You arrange a football game afterwards, and or you go to a park to chill. It's quite different in my view. But I think this sector is super interesting. There are many new companies entering this world, trying to gamify education, for example, with some gaming, with some games for kids. I worked with a very interesting company that was doing math exercises through gamification, through an app where the kids, of course, the parents, not the kids, but the parents of the kids would pay a monthly fee for the kids to learn, play and learn at the same time maths, you know? It's a very interesting way. There are also new concepts of turning it more gamified, such as Kahoot, that you all learn now in some conferences we played. There is a business model that I like a lot, which is ISAs, which are income share agreements, where basically these companies try to finance students as if they would be like an asset. And they are financing students to go to certain universities because they know the student will leave that university with a salary that can pay it back with a X percent of interest rate, you know? So why not investing in personal talent if you know that personal talent has a high probability of going to a very good job afterwards and give you 2% of their salary during 5 years, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
It's a very interesting business model that is growing quite a lot now.
Yeah, and actually we're going to have another a conversation like this one with a startup in Italy that's doing a very similar thing. So that's going to be, yeah, really interesting to talk about that when they come on.
It is indeed.
And also, how can institutions and sort of existing universities take advantage of these changes in your view, like having consulted sort of and having worked with them? Do you think universities in Europe or in other countries are ready or have the digital expertise or the innovative approach to sort of manage a big shift like the one that looks like it's going to happen? Or what do you think?
I don't think so. I don't think they have. I think US universities are already doing this for about 2-3 years. They are trying to transform their contents in a digital way. And actually, I did some courses with American universities. And European universities are not changing fast at all. They are more solid structures, maybe older. Maybe do not have the skills nor believe in this opportunity. I'm very convinced it's a huge opportunity, but in Europe is not happening at all. There are maybe 2-3 universities that are transforming their contents properly online. But I think it's just a question of time. They sooner or later will realize the importance of the digital world and how they can use more digital information, digital insights, and how to take the most out of it. And also understand, and a lot of people say that they do, but few do it, actually. Like, really train your people to code or to know the basics of technology, because this is changing really, really fast, the whole digital world, and the universities have to change, have to be more agile in this kind of transformation as well.
Okay, that's really interesting. And so now I wanted to move to tech and talk about more about in general tech. And you're the first person from one of the big tech companies to come on the podcast. So first of all, congratulations. You're very lucky because I get to ask you all the questions I've always wanted to ask. And the first question I wanted to ask you is, what are the biggest misconceptions about working at Google?
Well, that's a good question. Difficult and and a good one. Didn't prepare this one. I think there is, I can go more into detail, but most things that are said about Google, I think they are truth, most of them. But you have also always to be careful where you read your information, right? You can look for a certain article in Google and you can find about Google and you can find two different things about the same reality, right? So you can find articles that Google, in Google people don't work a lot of hours, and I'm sure you can find articles that will tell you that in Google people work a lot and work on weekends. I'm sure it's going to exist. But misconceptions, I would say that there is the feeling that is a super relaxed company, that everything works smoothly and no rush, no stress. It's just very good and very chilled. That's, I think, is an important one. And although it's true that it is chilled and it is a very, very open company, it's also true that people in the company, and the more you grow, the more your initial culture is diversified, right? And you cannot keep the garage culture you had when you were 10 people, when you are now 100,000 people. So although it's chilled, it's also very, very demanding as well, because you are working with people that are very ambitious and want their projects to be successful and want the projects to be fast. So it is a very, very fast-paced company that allows you to not work a lot of hours, but the hours that you work very productively, and you have to pay attention and be fast in doing your things. So although it's true that we don't work the investment banking hours or the consulting hours, it's also truth that the time that we are working is a super intense time, and you don't have time to breathe a lot of times. And then yourself, you have to put a top on your on your time that you work, because the work is infinite pretty much. So, or you stop it yourself, or it never stops. So I think that one is one. Another myth that I like to mention about Google is the Googliness component. That not sure if you heard about it, but Googliness.
Yeah, right, yeah. Explain it for the listeners.
Googliness concept is one of the four interviews that are done when you are in the recruitment process for Google. There are other three that are more tangible. One is more role-related knowledge. The other is more general cognitive ability, and the other is more leadership. So three that are more, let's say, commonly accepted in the world, in the industry, right? That are more related with the job. And Googliness is a fourth, and typically is the last check that recruiters do, which is believed to be known as if you are a nice person and if you do the airplane test, right, that you'd fly with that person during 8 hours if you'd be a good person. So a lot of people associate it to, you just need to look nice and it's fine. You just need to look, you are a cool person and it's fine. But actually, this concept goes beyond this friendly way of speaking or behaving. It goes more into a more intrinsic part of your profile, meaning if you are like an ambitious person, although you are chilled, you are an ambitious person, you have goals in your life and you fight for them, that a very important point is that you challenge the status quo. So when you see something, you see it in a critical way and you'll try to challenge why is that like this and why can't it be improved. So Googliness goes way beyond the chilled way of looking at it and is more the attitude that you have towards some problems. Okay.
Yeah.
And I would say third, I would say the scrutiny that exists nowadays, these last weeks and months around Google, and that Google can be the bad cop on the digital world and can be stealing information of people and being abusing of monopolistic positions. In my personal opinion, it's super unfair for Google because never saw a company that is so focused in improving the users' experiences, giving the users what they need to support social causes, to work on products that are free globally, which is incredible if you think the quantity of products that are since the beginning of the company, not because the company has money, but since the beginning are just for free, like products that we all use every day. You just use them without paying a cent. If you think about the positive things that are done around that, I think a lot of people don't think about it and just assume that you can have Google Maps for free forever, because you don't have to pay for geolocalization with all the information of restaurants or beach or bars or clubs. You just don't need to pay because you have it, right? It just Google has it. So it's a misconception that if you would lose all those products, I think a lot of us would notice that, wow, that company actually was doing something well.
I mean, yeah, of course everyone sort of, I'm sure everyone would agree with that. It's just this was the next question I was going to ask, is that, so it's perfect. It's more to sort of talk about antitrust and, have you seen The Social Dilemma? Have you watched the documentary?
Yes.
Yeah. So I mean, of course, that's not the sort of the best representation of sort of tech platforms, also because it concentrated more on social media, in which sort of Google sort of has never really entered as a space. They tried with Google Plus, but we all know how that went.
They failed very well.
But but I'm just thinking if there could be a better business model. I mean, for sure, these amazing free products have saved countless situations and probably lives as well. But if there is a better business model out there, if recurring revenue, for example, like if I not I'm for sure not everyone can, but if you were to ask me, pay, I don't know, a certain amount of money per month to access Google's products, and Google won't molest my data. That's like how some people would define it. I would be happy to do that because I am sort of more, I try to be more privacy conscious and more careful. But not everyone is, but like, what's your view on that? Like, is there any possibility for a change in business model, or how do you see this specific topic evolving?
I think there are alternatives. I saw the social dilemma. I don't really associate it a lot to Google. Maybe you could position a bit in YouTube, but very different. To be honest, it's very different, but I think is a very difficult topic. Some companies try to do the subscription model, right? So YouTube has the YouTube Red or YouTube Premium. It depends on the markets. YouTube Music, Spotify has the paid Spotify, the Spotify Premium, right? There are some business models around it. The social media companies, I don't think they do have it.
They should.
Although I'm not a big user nor expert in social media companies, I know they're how they work perfectly, but don't know about their views on future business models. But I think it's a very difficult topic, very, very difficult. You have to think, and not sure if you know the, I think it's called machine learning dilemma or something of MIT, or machine, I don't remember the name, but machine, social machine, something of MIT, that they basically, you have to take decisions as if you'd be a machine. And you have to take decisions for the most random scenarios, and if you go left or right, and if you'd, the decisions that you take in very complex moments. Having said this, I think if you put yourself in the business side, there are in the business of the companies. Let's put the universities. Okay, mm-hmm. let's say that you are an university and you want to sell online. You want to sell courses. Okay. Think that in digital, as another marketing channel for you, is nothing else than a marketing channel for you. Would you rather go to TV and pay a lot of money to have an ad every day in prime time at 9 p.m. after dinner? And you show up that ad to everyone in Italy or in the UK, everyone, like from 2 years old until 100 years old, because these are people that are watching that channel. Maybe you have no idea. You cannot measure it. The people are at home. You don't know who is doing that. Or would you rather invest in people that are between, so it's in the MBA case that I said before, people that are between the 25 years old and 40 years old, that live in big cities, that have big good jobs, that potentially would have money to pay an MBA, came from good universities, you know? So when you put yourself in the company's shoes, there are a lot of advantages in doing that well, right? In spending their money the best way possible. And that's what I believe social media companies try to do, is like position your message to the right person at the right time so you can profit the most for your business. You know, how do you use the personal information of the people? That's super, super, it's key. It's key and is critical for these companies to survive. I think the moment, and there were already some moments that some companies were thought about or were accused of using that information in the wrong way, like Cambridge Analytica or something. That is super, super hard. It's, for me, it's super important and should not be allowed at all. The way that you find that the information is not being used in the best way. And for that, I think that should exist more regulation and more fines, tougher fines for these kind of cases, because everything goes well if the companies are in good hands. If the companies suddenly are managed by the wrong people, it could go wrong.
Yeah, I mean, when you have some, like, I can't remember how old the Zuck is, but there's no way he's ever going to get fired from that position, or the board is never going to get rid of him, because he has a certain percentage of rights that gives him majority over all decisions in the company. So anyway, that's what we'll see. But I mean, I agree with fines. And how do you think these antitrust cases are gonna evolve in the US? Like, do you think there's gonna be some movement around Facebook, Google, Twitter, other platforms? Or is it more just smoke generated by the Trump administration or sort of US government in general?
I mean, each case is a case, right? You cannot generalize and say that everyone should be fined, that everyone does it in a bad way. I think there is a lot of lack of knowledge in the courts as well. When taking decisions, if you saw some of the questions that were asked to the leaders, to the tech leaders, you clearly understand that a lot of people do not understand a lot how it works. And a lot of these things that we can be talking about can actually be true, can actually be legal. You know, I'm 100% sure that a lot of the what's happening in these antitrust accusations are legal, a lot of them, not all, I'm not saying all, but a lot of them, I'm pretty sure. So I think each case is a case. If I'll have to say, talk about Google, I think from what I see, Google is not doing the wrong, is not doing anything wrong from what I see. But of course, I have limited information, of course, and I don't have access to all the information that exists out there or to all the actions that were taken. What I also think is that the bigger you are, the more exposed you are to scrutiny, you know? And if you think about it, all the tech companies go to this kind of antitrust listening sessions, right? Everyone, and there's no criteria. So I think it's part of the size and it's normal, the number of big companies that you do not see being accused of something. I mean, it's very rare, very, very rare.
Okay. So I'll just ask the last question and then we'll say goodbye to each other for now. But sort of moving more into advice for students and for our listeners, first of all, how did you get into Google? Like, who did you sell your soul to get into Google? And then I mean, Google is still an incredibly attractive place to work in. And can you give two or three tips of things people can do to actually increase their chances of getting into Google, either short term, like just networking with Googlers, or more in the long term, like actions they can take, like opening a startup or something like that?
Yeah, so for the first question, my case is a very typical case that was in a very proactive way that happened. So I saw a conference where a person from Google would go to speak at my university. So I went to talk with that person, and I was very, very lucky that they were actually in that moment recruiting a person that would fit perfectly in my profile. So they were looking for a person that would speak Portuguese and Spanish and English, and that would be based in Spain and would have some digital background. So I had a very good profile for that. And so, but I was very lucky to be in the right place at the right time. And I had already some skills because I really ambitioned to work at the company someday. And actually my process was super, super fast. It took me maybe 2 weeks to finish the process, which in Google sometimes can take 2 months or more. So it can be very long. In terms of advice, as I said before, there are mostly four areas, right, that the interviews go on. And for the interviews, I think it's the last part of all this process. You are good to go with internet information. You look for what does the recruitment process looks like, but is mostly the GCA, the general cognitive ability, role-related knowledge, leadership, and the Googliness part that I said before, that I explained before. And about getting into it, I think you should be a very good match for the role that you are applying for. Okay, if you are applying for product manager in Google, think that there are an average of maybe 2,000 applications for each role. So why would you be the 1% best for that product manager role? Do you have like those technical skills? Do you know how to code that specific language? Do you know how to manage a project or how to create a product from scratch? Do you have experience, you know? The product role fit, the role fit is super important. And if you don't know yet which role, or if you don't know yet which company, like building that skill or that experience in that way, it's one of the most important things. The networking part, as you saw in my case, is also super important, because I would say more than 70-80% of the people in Google enter with a referral from a Googler. So getting to know someone in the company that could eventually invest on you and trust you to give you a referral, I think that is super, super important as well. And then as third, I would say to try to look of what would differentiate yourself from another person, and how can you tell your story? And this works for most of the companies, right? Like, why are you special? Why are you different? And how can you enrich your curriculum? Like you, Alex, that you built the podcast from scratch and you did something very innovative that not everyone does, right? Like, all of us have the chance to create a project from scratch and learn with it and fail and learn and fail again and grow. And with all those experiences that you differentiate yourself from the crowd, you'll learn a lot. You'll enjoy a lot with those experiences, I'm pretty sure. And you'll feel that you have something special, that the moment that you'll apply for a certain company, you can tell your story in a different way than everyone, or then other person that did school, and that's all.
Okay, you know, well, so, thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you for the kind words, and thank you in general for all the all the advice you've given today. And I think, it was great to talk to you. And if you have any final remarks or any, I don't know if you have like social media where people can follow you, or if you have a final message you want to send.
Yeah, definitely. You can follow me on LinkedIn or on social media. As I said before, I don't use a lot social media. I think my last picture in Instagram maybe has, I don't know, maybe 3 years. I'm not sure. But LinkedIn, I'm there by my name. If you look for me, you'll find me and happy to connect, of course. And of course, thanks Filippo and Alex for having me today and for the invitation. My pleasure to be here with you.
Thank you so much again for coming to Beyond Business, and have a good evening.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye.